utilized land use reviews or other methodology for less parking, the process is likely to be cumbersome and expensive. It defeats the goals of reducing development costs and promoting affordability. I'm also concerned that, considering the vocal frustration that raised this parking issue in the first place, that high-density affordable housing developments could face additional barriers from neighbors whose perception of affordable housing are based on outdated and inaccurate but still widely held stereotypes. We can address some of these barriers to housing affordability through code language that allows transit-oriented affordable housing development to provide fewer parking spaces than comparative market rate developments could easily be modeled after existing verbiage for elderly and disabled high-density housing. Thank you for listening. And I had a bit more to say, but I'll save that for another time.
Since you're the mayor, if we could, I think he's the first person from the nonprofit affordable housing community that's testified, and I actually had a follow-up question. Could he have the courtesy of finishing his testimony?
Please do.
Sure. My additional testimony wasn't related necessarily to affordable housing, but addressed just some of the things that I don't think that this is the amendments as addressed are necessarily as comprehensive as they could be, in talking about how the market will the market will provide for this with free on-street parking, that's really not included as part of the market.
So, Travis, just one observation, because we haven't actually, I don't think there's been enough input on this issue from the affordable housing community. So I'm very glad you're here. I'm glad you're raising the issue. And one of my frustrations is most of the housing surveyed by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is not affordable.
Right.
Most of this new market rate stuff is not affordable. And parking or no parking, it's already priced well beyond the reach of the people that PCRI serves and that the city targets through its housing policies. And I'll give you an example. The average rent for a one-bedroom apartment in Southeast Portland is over $1,300. 60% of median family income, which is our sweet spot, you know, in affordability, and PCRI is one of our best partners, 60% for a family of four is about $42,000. So they can afford about a $937 apartment. So they're priced out. A younger person, a single person making, say, 30% of MFI, sort of starting out, $30,000 a year, maybe an entry-level person in the affected neighborhood, they can afford $781. So one of my frustrations has been, A, this housing is not affordable by any definition the city uses. B, we heard from Justin Wood that there might be some flaw in our tax abatement policies as respect to the private market, where we're not seeing enough developers coming forward seeing a benefit of using the transit-oriented development tax break or something else, because that at least buys us 20% affordable.
Agreed.
So we've got this conundrum. And one of the other things we've heard from BPS is that because of the tight vacancy rate, what's essentially happened is the market has converged. With or without parking, they're getting a premium. In fact, some developers have said that some developers have gone on the record saying other developers are getting away with a kind of an anomaly in our market where they get market rates without the parking. So I share your concern, and one of the things I hope we can do moving forward is figure out through the comprehensive plan how we do a better job stimulating in the private market affordable units, whether it's tailoring our tax abatement programs, finding other ways. Some have suggested we use inclusionary zoning. That, of course, we're preempted from doing until the legislature lifts that. But we're going to need more tools, because the bulk of the stuff that's before us today, as far as the survey by BPS, is in no way affordable. And so it isn't even addressing the need that organizations like yours, as a mission-driven nonprofit, are dedicated to. And I think that is a conundrum here, and I'm glad you flagged the issue.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Dick. Hi, my name is Richard Volk. And I live at 3634 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland, Oregon. I want to start off by thanking you for bringing the parking issue forward for a vote. I'm speaking today in support of Commissioner Fish's proposal to strengthen the parking regulations drafted by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I would add only that you consider lowering the threshold for parking regulations to a 20-unit apartment building from a 31-unit. My reasoning, and that of others who testified at the Planning and Sustainability meeting, is that a 31-unit threshold encourages the building of 30-unit buildings, and in the event that two of those are built next to each other, a neighborhood is suddenly faced with 60 units without any applicable code that mandates on-site parking. I also am in support of an emergency adoption of planning regulations today. At the last Richmond Neighborhood Association meeting, a proposal was presented for a 74-unit apartment building at Southeast 48th and Division with no on-site parking. The notoriety of Mr. Sackoff's building at 37th and Division has opened the floodgates for other developers to join the surge and increase the number of units in their buildings by using space that, with parking regulations in effect, would have to be allocated for on-site parking. Our neighborhoods can't risk 30 days or more of open waters for those developers who shift what should be their burden of parking to the neighborhoods. Thank you for all of your work that you do to make this a better city.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
The next four are Tony Fisher, Steve Gutman, Donna Ernst, and Robert Liberty. And they'll be followed by David Partridge, Richard Milo, Ann Stoltz, and Jeff Vincent.
Welcome. Go ahead, please.
I'm Tony Fisher, and I live in Southeast. I'm on Ivon Street. I'm part of the Richmond Group, but I'm here speaking for myself today. There are a few things that are really, and you're just listening to the people speak, things pop up that you want to address. I'll try to interject them, but I'll try to be brief. I'm a refugee from New Jersey, like my friend there before. And anyone that's been in New Jersey for 20 or 30 years knows the problems associated with density. People are leaving that state in very large numbers right now, and they're losing clout all over in terms of influence. And it's a state that's going down because of the density. I have a car. I'm a renter. I'm not a homeowner. I am a renter. I live in one of 9 units, and I have a car, which I absolutely need for things like medical emergencies with my family, and people in my family don't drive. And I have to take care of a lot of business by having a car. There are things that I need to do. So I'm a car owner and a renter. Now, the first thing I want to do after kind of introducing myself is to thank you all for all your hard work. I know I'm not going to come up here and say, well, you need to work in the interest of the people or bring a lawyer out and do something, you know, talk about this or that. I know you work in the interest of the people. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting where you are. So I appreciate everything you do and this forum that we're allowed to have the opportunity to speak. So it's a big thank you there. I urge you to pass the parking regulations today and that serve the interests of the people. I think that's critical to remember we're in the interests of the people here, not any one person, one group. It's all of us together. I like the tiered proposal put forth by Nick Fish, and I think it's a great idea. I like the unit substitutions being cut down to 50%. I love the idea of the provision for handicapped. I think that's really critical. And I've heard about the traffic and congestion and getting someone out that's handicapped in the case of a fire or a problem. I think they're all good. I hope that people that work, our team that works on the comprehensive plan, continues to look at parking because I don't think it should stop here. I think it needs to be evaluated constantly to see if these policies we put into effect work. And I love the fact that we have a team that's honest and communicative. Went to those meetings. They're great. The studies. The study that was done by that was done for the parking and other studies have indicated that 60 to 70% of renters in these buildings own cars. And we're not going to turn cars into bicycles because developers build another building. That hasn't happened in the past. There's no reason to think that people are going to say, well, you know, time to get rid of the car because we have a building. And I just don't see that as being realistic, nor do I see it as an argument for a developer. I think that these parking regulations, which are very solid, whatever you agree on, I do support my association's position of putting them into effect immediately on an emergency provision. I buy the argument that there will be developers and people that will rush through plans to beat this and get this within that 30-day deadline. I know that you like to deliberate and you feel you need to deliberate carefully on all of these issues. So I understand your position and you say we need to think about that. I understand that. But I do advocate and support the position of the Richmond people. These problems, okay, we're here on parking, but it's not just parking. It's all of those issues, the traffic, the safety, the crime, the air quality, the water usage, emergency services, the handicapped and disabled, tons of things that are related, even though we're here on parking.
Because of the hour, I want to get you to conclude.
Right. And I think that goes to the and I'm not going to get into that, but I'm going to go to the density. I think that goes to the issue of the density. And I think there's a need for greater involvement by people in the neighborhood. This was not done with the place on 37th and Division. The developer did not communicate well all along through the process. And I think it's important. I think someone on council brought up the issue of the cumulative effect of things. I think it's absolutely critical that something be done to look at the cumulative effect and not look at each building by itself and not evaluate on that basis.
Thank you so much. Greg, I have to cut you off.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate
good.
You being here.
Yeah.
Thanks. Go ahead. You're on.
Okay, thanks. My name is Steve Gutman. I'm a resident of the Richmond Neighborhood Association, and I've been involved in this discussion for months, actually, both with my neighborhood association and, frankly, in opposition to most of what they've been proposing and forwarding, and it hasn't made me a very popular man in my neighborhood. But after a lot of heated debate, I've so slowly come to the conclusion that I really do think that everybody is acting and speaking in good faith. And not only that, I also think that the vast majority of us fundamentally agree on the ends that we're seeking. We all want vibrant commercial corridors. We all want affordable places to live. We all want less urban sprawl. We even all want less parking congestion. The things that we're arguing about, I think, is really just this. What's the best means to get our desired ends? And I believe that we're going about it sort of backwards. In my mind, the best order to approach this problem is first and foremost to legalize and actively promote a private peer-to-peer parking market, basically Airbnb for parking for driveways. There are so many empty driveways in the Richmond neighborhood every day because the owners of those driveways either have a car that's too big to fit in that driveway or because they simply prefer to park on the street. I have neighbors across the street who own 3 cars. They have a driveway, and never once have I ever seen any of their cars in their driveway. And there are plenty of these, a lot of such driveways. There are apps for this. One is called parkatmyhouse.com. It was developed by BMW, and it is being adopted all over the world in very dense cities. Another one is called parkingpanda.com, and it's based in San Francisco, and again, it's creating a purely peer-to-peer marketplace in private driveways. It also opens up the market for unused commercial parking lots, because a commercial parking lot owner can post a parking space that's for sale. This would bring a huge additional supply of parking online overnight without pouring any concrete whatsoever. It's currently illegal, and I'd urge you, first and foremost, to pass a law legalizing that. I think it's illegal because it's a commercial use of a residential property, but I think given the situation, that's a readily available solution that we should pursue. Number two, I think the council and the city should work with Richmond and other neighborhoods to establish neighborhood permit districts. If everyone who parks in the right-of-way were to pay even just $60 a year, that's $5 a month, to park for a parking permit to park in the public right-of-way, I believe some people would move their cars back into their driveways. Others would probably sell their cars. In fact, I talked to my neighbor across the street who works for the city, and he said, there's no sense in my having 3 cars. We only have 2 drivers. But it's free to park on the street, and so he warehouses his 3 cars on the street.
Steve, I want to get you to wrap up in a minute, okay?
Sorry? I
need you to wrap up soon.
Sorry. Those who don't have a driveway could either pay the $60 or cut a better deal for a neighbor's driveway. And with the city collecting and splitting with a neighborhood $60 per car per year for cars parked in the public right-of-way, there would be a nice pot of money available to do something great that benefits all neighborhood residents. It's called the Parking Benefit District, and it's a common tool that's used in other cities. We don't have one. Third is to establish some commercial meter districts. This would generate churn, which is what merchants really want, and once again, return part of the parking revenues from those meters to the neighborhood or to the local business association. Then, once these three subtle, flexible, fundamentally light-touch, market-based measures are implemented, if there's still a problem with parking congestion, then, and only then, consider imposing parking requirements. The rest of the nation looks to Portland for leadership on these issues. I hope that we won't lead them in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Donna Ernst, and I'm a dental hygienist and a resident of Richmond neighborhood. I've lived there 61 years, and 35 of them have been on 46th and Division, just two blocks from the proposed 74 unit on 48th and Division. And I'm coming to talk on behalf of actually hundreds of people. And how that happened was my kids own the Stock and Barrel restaurant, and it's right there on 48th and Division. And just 5 weeks ago, they were informed that they had to be out by April 30th. And they had already signed a two-year lease. And so, they were just shocked. It was just a big, huge shock. So we had to let the customers know that they were going to leave. And all the customers were just livid, you know, because when they found out there were going to be apartments, and we said it nice, you know, that they're going to build some apartments, but the people didn't like it. And I have, like, all kinds of lists here of emails of people that, well, mainly they want to know if my kids are going to have a restaurant someplace else so they can go to it. But still, all of these people expressed they were just so upset about the idea of having more apartments. Then they kept talking about all the apartments going down Division and then the lack of parking. And they wanted me to be sure and, you know, speak for them. So, and I don't know, there's a few hundred. And then a lot of people have been signing the book here, telling about how much they enjoy Stock and Barrel. And so anyway, it's just, we just hope that you'll make sure that there is enough parking. Now, his ideas were interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But I do hope that there will be adequate parking for this 74 units. And also the TriMet. I took the bus for 40 years downtown every week to work, and it was never that crowded. But I haven't worked the last 3 years, and I took the bus downtown to go to the last meeting, and it was just standing room only, and that was a Tuesday at 12 o'clock, and I thought, whoa, it's really changed in 3 years. So TriMet's going to really have to put a lot of more buses out there, otherwise people won't take them. And so anyway, and I just wondered if do you know if the building is still going to happen on 74th? Because the owner of the property isn't saying anything. He just, so we don't know, because my kids think they have to move out April 30th, so.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think I know, but.
Yeah, I just have no idea, so.
Thanks for being here today.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
I wish them well in finding another location.
Yeah, because it's Portland's best burger. That's the problem. It's like the best burger in Portland, and that's what it says in this book.
Sounds pretty good
right now.
Tons
of people. Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming. So, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you for your tough decisions you have to make.
Thank you. Robert.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Liberty. I live at 35th and Tibbetts, which is four blocks from Division. I was born in North Portland. I lived in Northwest Portland, Southwest Portland, Northeast Portland, and now, last 9 years, Southeast Portland. I've been involved in land use planning matters since 1981. In the early 80s, I was on the association, the board of directors, the Northwest Neighbors. At the time of the protests, arrests, and arson associated with Phil Morford's projects. And I listened to many debates about density and our future when I serve in the Metro Council representing Southwest and Southeast Portland. I have 5 points to make this afternoon. First, do not waver from this city and our region's basic strategy of accommodating growth along arterial served by transit and in centers. This approach saves the farmlands, the forest lands, and the natural areas that provide us with food, with fiber, with water, and with places for wildlife that is that is necessary for a healthy ecosystem. After decades of planning for it, hoping for it, finally we are having arterial redevelopment. It's becoming a reality. Now is exactly the wrong time to create the slightest doubt that you intend to fully implement our policy of compact transit-supported sustainable development. Second, and connected to the first point, it's unfair possibly illegal, and extremely dangerous precedent to change the criteria that apply to development proposals after a completed application has been received. The certainty provided by judging applications based only on the criteria that were in place at the time an application is completed doesn't benefit just developers, it benefits neighbors. Changing criteria midstream may serve development opponents today, but it will be used by developers tomorrow, then taken up by factions on the city council the following week, and the next month will be in chaos. That's not how we do things in Oregon. Third, there have been proposals for new policies regulating parking in public streets, and some good ones. But any such regulations must treat apartment renters and homeowners exactly the same way. Apartment residents are our citizens, and they have just as much claim on public parking as anyone else. Fourth, if you decide to impose new parking space requirements on apartments, I ask you, Commissioner Fish, to include a waiver of a generous share of those required parking spaces for any developer who commits to rent permanently at affordable rents to persons and families of modest means. Finally, acting now and in haste under the pressure of a neighborhood controversy means you lose the opportunity to digest the many new facts and creative solutions that have been offered to you today, and to act without the larger context of what's happening in our neighborhoods, which is densification, gentrification, and additional traffic. Please fold this into your discussion update of the comprehensive plan. Thank you.
Can I just follow up on one point?
Please.
So I really appreciate you addressing affordability. So could you just sketch out how that waiver might work and how you would structure it?
Well, at least using your proposed amendments as a model. And by the way, I've been in the neighborhood 9 years. The change in incomes of the neighborhood is pretty striking. And it's expressed not just along the street, but in the remodels and the kinds of homes that are being built. So this is a neighbor-wide issue. It is not a neighborhood-wide, not just on the arterials. I think I'd follow your model and say, if you promise to provide a unit of housing and that will be permanently affordable to
60 years.
Well, that's not my definition of permanence, although I'll probably be dead
well,
in 60 years.
That will be permanent. But.
Yeah, that, we believe that will be permanent.
So I like the concept. So this is in effect voluntary inclusionary zoning.
Yes, and I'm with you all the way to get the ban lifted. I remember exactly when that happened in the early 90s, but this would be a way of creating some incentives. And yeah. Structured parking in some of those units is pretty valuable, and it might well make sense for them to say, I'd be glad to rent at $700 a month for, you know, adjusted however is appropriate for changes in price for 60 years in exchange for not having to build those five units. And that will give us a little more income diversity in our neighborhood, which I see is disappearing.
And can I just applaud that for two reasons. One is our overall goals of having affordable housing generally, but actually our equity and fair housing goals, that if we miss this historic opportunity to develop affordable, truly affordable housing in these areas that are experiencing growth, we'll never be able to turn back the clock on that.
I think some of the things that Mr. Gutman talked about have interesting applications if you try and translate them into opportunities for people to create affordable housing in their homes too.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Next four are David Partridge, Richard Milo, Anna Stoltz, and Jeff Vincent. And they'll be followed by Jack Lavelle, Eric Jens, I believe is the last name, on Flanders, and Ben Schonenberger, and Annalee Halova.
Welcome. Go ahead.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is David Partridge. Thank you for the opportunity to testify about current city policies and zoning requirements regarding parking. I graduated from the University of Oregon with a Bachelor's of Architecture degree in 1991. I became a registered architect in the state of Oregon in 1996. I'm a former managing principal with Anchor Moisson Architects, and I'm currently an associate with Meyer Group Architects. My entire 22-year architectural career has been here in Portland. I'm a member of the American Institute of Architects, commonly known as AIA. I was the president of Portland AIA in 2008. Currently, I am on the board of directors of Oregon AIA. a position I've held for 7 years. Parking is always a contentious issue. However, Portland has wisely focused on minimizing suburban sprawl, maintaining the urban growth boundary, and maximizing public transit for over 30 years now. This is one of the reasons why our city's current planning and zoning code, Title 33, does not require parking for most multifamily urban infill projects that are located strategically within our existing neighborhoods and designated transit corridors to provide for higher density within the urban growth boundary. It is my opinion and belief that Portland should continue maintaining its progressive, sustainable focus on developing and growing vertically around our existing infrastructure investments rather than horizontally. I believe high-density urban infill projects that provide for close-in, walkable urban living while minimizing further reliance on automobiles is the correct growth model appropriate for our city and one that we should continue to follow. Therefore, I'm here today to state that I strongly support the city's current policy for less reliance on street parking, for less reliance on off-street parking, investment in car share programs, and mass transit that supports increased density along transit corridors. I do not believe that additional parking requirements that are being considered by the City Council should be implemented. Lastly, I would like to submit to the City Council a copy of the AIA, APA, ASLA, Urban Design Panel letter that was written earlier this year and was hand-delivered to each city commissioner. This letter supports and illustrates my opinions and positions that I've stated regarding this highly important issue. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, my name is Richard Mello, and I live at 2303 Southeast 37th, basically a block away from the building at 37th and Division. And I want to thank you so much. I remember when we started this almost a year ago. That's when I became involved. It's almost a year ago. You know, especially you, Commissioner Fritz, were very receptive to talking to us and hearing us out and hearing what our concerns were. And I'm really grateful that you guys have spent so much time communicating with us and, you know, pretty much, you know, just listening to us. It's been really great because the developer has not always listened to us. That has been a major issue. I want to say that I urge you strongly to pass this ordinance, and I'm in preference of the amendment that Commissioner Fish proposed. I urge you strongly to pass it as an emergency ordinance so it goes into effect immediately. The reason why is we do not know how many developers are out there right now who could get their permits in the next 37 to 40 days and create more parkingless buildings. Which, you know, if we get a number of new buildings like this in the next 30 days, it's almost like passing no ordinance at all. So I urge you to like do it as quickly as you can and just at the very least just get it done. I do want to say a few things about the development that is near my house. We took the case to LUBA and we won the reversal, and I've heard a lot of people here from the developer community say that they don't like the idea of rules changing midstream. I just want to emphasize that this particular project is an outlier. I don't like this idea that you could build first and then ask questions later, which is exactly what happened. While this particular project was under LUBA appeal, they went ahead and framed the whole thing. All they had was a bit of a foundation when the appeal was agreed to be heard by LUBA. They went ahead and built the whole thing, and now they're screaming that they're being called out and threatening to sue the city. As a taxpayer in the city, I'm just livid that they would even consider bringing litigation against the city in a case where they were clearly, that they built under their own risk. This whole idea of build first and ask questions later, it's just ridiculous to me. So I do urge you to pass this as an emergency, and in any circumstance, I want the building at 37th Division to be included in any kind of new ordinance that passes. And I appreciate you taking the time to listen.
Can I just ask a clarifying question? And thank you for reminding us that we have been doing this for almost a year. Mm-hmm. There's been some comments about how quickly this has been done, and indeed it is record speed for zoning code amendments, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
regarding, in general, the urban form of these buildings in commercial zones, is it your sense that the folks around the ones on Division would like there to be commercial on the ground floor?
You know, that really depends on who you talk to. I'm still weighing the ideas. Right now, I'm not completely sold with the idea of commercial on the ground floor, in that I don't know what kind of commercial would be. You know, it's like, you know, it really, I need to hear more about it. And I know that there's a lot of talk about it right now, about whether commercial's well-suited for the building. But, you know, it's like, I don't know if we have any say in that either.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Welcome. Hi. My name is Jeff Vincent. I'm a property owner in the Richmond neighborhood and also a designer and project manager for Path Architecture and Kaiser Group. I was asked by the Portland Design Commission to read a statement. None of them could make it. I was also asked to make clear that I'm not a member and I'm not at liberty to answer any questions for them. So just here to read their statement.
A new tactic here.
Yeah.
Right. Would you like to be on the Divine Commission?
Next, you're going to ask us to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Possibly. Dear Mayor Hales and members of council, as you are aware, Portland real estate has arrived at a place where it is now economically feasible to build apartment buildings that have fewer than one parking spot per unit. In some cases, no parking included in the development whatsoever. Apparently, we can now expect apartment dwellers in Portland, Portland's many attractive neighborhoods outside the central city, to either be willing to live without a car or at least live knowing that they'll have to hunt for a nearby street parking space in their neighborhood every time they drive. Essentially, we are seeing what has been a long-time norm in the Northwest District spill into revitalized and rejuvenating neighborhoods across Portland. On one hand, this trend represents Portland's grand planning dream come to fruition. We finally live in a city where there is not necessarily a given that one must have a car. By dedicating space entirely to living spaces for people instead of storage places for cars, these apartment projects are making it possible for more people, including people of limited means, to live close to the kinds of amenities and services that Portlanders hold dear. One does not have to look far in America to see how requiring parking in multifamily developments has a devastating effect on street life. Towers surrounded by moats of parking and buildings whose ground floors are consumed entirely by parking garages are the fruit borne by requiring 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 ratio of parking spaces to units. In Portland, when we began to take back our city from freeway development, when we started working for walking neighborhoods and good transit that was safe, convenient, and affordable, when we started striving for a city that people sought to live in rather than hoped one day to flee, wasn't being able to build a multifamily building without worrying about where the cars would go and a logical extension of that dream becoming reality? Of course, as you know, the reaction to these un- and underparked multifamily buildings landing in established Portland neighborhoods has been mixed at best. We've seen a spike in testimony from neighbors and neighborhood associations about the issue, and they're frustrated that we can't talk about parking, because the design guidelines that inform our decisions do not address the inclusion of parking, only its design if it is included. Often the parking issue looms so large that those who testify that issues with the architecture, the stuff we can talk about, get secondary consideration. We understand, some of us, on a very personal level, how hard it can be to adjust to new density in an established neighborhood. All of a sudden, that parking space that you could always find right in front of your cute driveway-less bungalow evaporates. The next thing you know, you're walking 1, 2, and 3 blocks with your kids to your groceries. It's true. However, today's Design Commission strongly supports Portland's efforts to grow denser, more urban, more livable for a wide variety of people, including those who choose to live without a car. Because the proposed changes could have a profound effect on Portland's urban fabric, we believe the City Council should take an incremental approach to this issue. Instituting neighborhood parking permits is a logical first step. Doing so will give you and the citizens you represent time to address all of the issues surrounding the parking challenges in these great neighborhoods. Our fear is that once this code language goes into effect, it will be nearly impossible to repeal, and we will be living with the consequences for a very long time to come. We believe this topic should be addressed in a more thorough way in the Portland Comprehensive Plan. We don't want to leave you with the impression that we don't have deep concerns about the ability of the city's transportation infrastructure to keep pace with the development and support these newly dense neighborhoods. If we tell you that it's possible to live in Portland without a car, we ought to be a stellar transit there to back up the promise. If we ask people to walk 3 blocks with toddlers and groceries in tow, the sidewalks should be well-maintained, barrier-free, and well-lit. When neighborhoods come to us with concerns about parking, they're not always focused on the pain of losing their parking spaces. They've also brought concerns that the transit-oriented developments in their neighborhoods are decreasingly served by our transit agency, especially when it comes to bus lines. We agree that these neighbors, that the issues is of deep concern. It is unfortunate that the very moment Portland real estate and renters' sensibilities seem to have arrived at our demands of car-free urbanism, our transit agency is raising fares, dropping service, and is still unable to get a handle on its budget. We also note Portland's issues with maintaining our significant investment in sidewalks and roads. We think that the policymakers in the city that care about planning, sustainability, and the vibrancy of our city should pay close attention to this issue. And should be pushing for sensible, sustainable transportation planning by both TriMet and PBOT. Thank you very much for considering our testimony today.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that. If you could leave that for the record, that would be good.
I can. I also have a statement. I'm not sure if I have time to read it.
Leave it for us. Yeah, better leave it for us.
Okay, I'll leave it for you. Also a statement from my employer, Ben Kaiser.
Okay, great. Now, if you could leave that copy that way, Carlo, make sure we all get copies of all of them. Sorry.
Absolutely.
The next four are Jack Lavelle, Eric Jens, Ben Schonberger, and Aniele Halova. And the last two who signed up are Ryan Porter and Alicia Cohen. We'll be after them.
Welcome.
Jack Lavelle, I'm just going to say my little spec because you have all the data, you have all the info. Okay, you have it. My spec, I take TriMet, all right, and I'm maxed out with a backpack and one box, or one hand. You got to really have one hand free. Okay, so all stuff you got to take, this errands, this paperwork, that, everything, like I said, I'm maxed out. So next step, look at a car. Probably not money for a car, I don't. I'm projected I'm not, so I'm going to have to be rideshare at times I can do it. So then, like, parking. The parking's ridiculous. I mean, like I said, you have all the answers, and to not do it, to go with government, no, it's the citizens' call. And they have all the info, and to not pass it, that's basically treason on you guys. Because like I said, the ratio, what they said, I'm not going to repeat it, but like I said, it's all there. So you have all the answer. If you don't pass it, it's treason on you. And you're held to the citizens, U.S. citizens, not government. You're bonded to the citizens. And this is our car, and it's right. You guys don't do it, you're wrong. That's it.
Thank you. Thanks. You're next.
Okay. My name's Ben Schoenberger. I'm here on behalf of Housing Land Advocates. We're a nonprofit organization that advocates for land use policies that support affordable housing. And we represent over 250 people across the state who are active in housing and equity issues. So we speak from the equity and affordability standpoint. We oppose the idea of increasing parking requirements for housing and do so on economic grounds and equity grounds. The economics have been talked about a lot, but there's just a few basic ideas that requiring parking doesn't make it free. Everyone pays the higher prices of creating that parking, higher prices in goods, higher prices in rents. And largely, though not entirely, those costs fall on the renters in forms of higher rents. The city's own study back in November demonstrated this by showing that parking requirements, even at the levels that the PSC has proposed, raised a minimum of $50 a month on the rent in the sort of hypothetical model that they created. The tiered approach proposed in one of the amendments actually ratchets those up higher and would make those costs even more. Academic studies on the subject are also numerous and unequivocal that parking increases the cost of housing and makes less of it. So just to say it again, parking displaces housing and raises prices. There's not really any real debate on this. Another way to look at it is this, is that requiring the parking, which increases those rents by $50 a month, is a way of assessing a 6% tax on the renters to maintain that parking. That's unfair and inequitable, especially since renters, in general, as a group, are less wealthy than homeowners. Portland needs to set its policies that look ahead to the future and not to its past. And the demographic trends that have been observed nationwide and especially strongly here in Portland are really clear. Households are getting smaller, driving and vehicle ownership is declining, and right now there's a vacancy rate crisis in the central neighborhoods of Portland. The neighborhoods where these developments are occurring are wonderful, desirable, amenity-rich places, which is why people want to live there. I know because I live in one of these neighborhoods in northeast Portland, and I welcome the energy and the diversity and the activity that new development brings. In other words, in my view, yes, in my backyard. Portland has a rising need for quality rental housing at all income levels, and the way to get there is to build more housing and less parking. Neighbors have valid concerns about change, and if the issue is design, stronger design standards can be implemented. If it's about parking, permit districts are a solution. If it's about process, more steps to gain city approval can be implemented. My organization looks at policies from the perspective of whether they make housing more affordable and accessible, and the changes that are being discussed today do the opposite of that. They increase housing costs by limiting its supply, and they shift those costs from owners onto renters. Portland can do better than this, and changing the development code citywide is not the right response for a highly localized problem. So Housing Land Advocates recommends restarting this process, including a broader group of stakeholders, and achieving the goals that Portland says it wants to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Hi.
Good afternoon. My name is Anya Halova, and I'm a city planner by training, but I'm practicing as a mixed-use sustainable real estate developer specializing in student housing. I'm also a volunteer on the Community Involvement Committee for the Portland Plan, on the Residential Development and Compatibility Policy Expert Group, and on the Adjustments Committee. As you can see from my work and interests, my passions stem from both supporting and increasing public participation in the planning process and also ensuring that planning goals serve the public good. I reside in the inner southeast in a single-family home with no on-street parking, just 1 mile from the development site, so I'm well aware of the parking constraints and issues in this area. Given this, I make the following statements. There are statewide planning goals that mandate the development of needed housing near public transportation within the urban growth boundary. Given Portland's small lot size, diversity in land ownership, building types, and living styles, the proposed zoning amendments go against the ability for the city to ensure that this needed housing will happen without sprawl. The reality of this amendment will be lower density development, increased housing, missing teeth in the urban fabric, and less reliance on public transportation due to the ease and convenience and readily available parking. This goes directly against the commonly shared goals of livability and sustainability that we have developed together as a community for the past 3 years in the Portland Plan. Progressive cities like Portland have always understood that parking should be market-driven forces and that encouraging the use of public transportation only comes as a result of decreasing the ease and availability of parking in areas that are close in. Creating more parking has never solved a parking problem. There are more effective ways to tackle the problem than requiring on-site parking. These include parking districts, meters, and paid lots that go to the heart of the problem by forcing people to either pay, be inconvenienced, or make alternative lifestyle choices in a more livable and vibrant city for all. Developers, including myself, operate within market conditions and land constraint realities. Many of the properties within Portland are too small to accommodate such parking ratios while making them financially feasible. Have these parking ratios been tested out on smaller conditions throughout the city to see what the outcome will be? Case in point, I'll present one of my current projects currently under construction, Art House, a 50-unit building on a quarter block next to the North Park blocks, future home to art students. Art House is located in a CX zone, has a walk score of 100, and is deemed a walkers, bikers, and transit paradise. Under the proposed amendments, this project would never have happened. Besides destroying the street frontage and creating holes in the urban fabric, it would have been financially infeasible. Building underground parking is cost prohibitive on a quarter block site, and adding any parking would have increased the rents beyond reason. There's a fine line between what a project can and cannot bear. The bottom line is that the bank would not have funded the project if it did not meet certain thresholds. Requiring a project which is intended for a certain demographic and has readily accessible transit to provide parking makes no sense. Please consider these when making your final decision. Also, please consider the precedent that is set when changing regulations midstream. We are looking to the city to instill confidence in their commitment to the active, long-range, progressive planning process that is currently underway. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, can I just follow up on
Please.
One point?
Yeah.
Since you mentioned Art House, and we're currently doing a review of SDCs generally in this, for parks and looking at whether the rates applicable to dorms are appropriately set, Art House is going to be student housing. And so as I was listening to your very thoughtful testimony, I was thinking that, do you think we should revisit this question, particularly in the context of like dorms and student housing, where if we get evidence that shows it's less likely that those occupants have vehicles?
Yes, I do agree with that. I think what is more notable is thinking about Generation Y and the millennial generation versus Generation X and generations before then. The trends for that generation are completely different. I have three siblings that fall in that category. All three of them have chosen to get rid of their cars. Not a choice necessarily that a person in Generation X would make. So I think a big thing that's missing from this is people's perception about, you know, choices that they're going to make. And so, yes, I believe student housing naturally falls into that category. But I think the people that are living, that are students now, will start to convert to people who don't want or use a car.
I think you make a great point. And by the way, we talk about the generational divide perhaps on this issue. One of the concerns that I have is that if we don't provide some level of parking in some of our transit corridors, are we saying to the older adults who are among those who surveyed, 70% of whom renters have at least one car, are we saying to older adults that may need a car for their lifestyle that they are an essentially regulated out of those very desirable neighborhoods? And that is one of the effects of saying that we're not going to have the car, not going to have parking, is that for people as they get older for whom parking is maybe a necessity, particularly people with mobility issues, are we saying in effect they can't have the benefit of living in those areas?
I think that it works actually the same for an older spectrum than it does also for younger. I think the middle, you know,
I was throwing in mobility issues.
Mobility issues. I think all the buildings that are built now are handicap accessible. A lot of the older buildings that currently exist from the 1920s, 30s, 40s don't have that. So I think there's a lot of benefits that new buildings have now that address some of those issues. And with the transit system also addresses those issues. So
appreciate it.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify, the art house is, you said, on the North Park block?
It's on the North Park block.
So I'm looking behind at the planners. This doesn't apply in the central city. So it wouldn't have been subject to these regulations. Okay. It doesn't apply in any of the planned districts.
Congratulations, by the way, on that building. That's the old Powell's site.
Yeah, it's great.
It's the new PNCA housing.
Yeah.
Fabulous addition.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
It's actually a beautiful building, too.
Thank you.
And the last two I have are Ryan Porter and Alicia Cohen.
And Mr. Stacy has been very patient.
You had some other people who asked to speak who didn't get to sign up, Mayor.
Okay.
Stacy, you can have the last word.
No, there will be others behind me.
Rushing the stage or?
Rebut.
The last. Go ahead. Sure. Are you going to go right now?
You can go.
Okay. Hi, Steve. Been a while. I just heard about this.
What's your name into the record?
I'm sorry, my name is Peter Cowan. I live on the base of Mount Tabor on a street that actually has no parking. Hasn't been a problem for me, but that's not what I'm really here to talk about. I didn't really have any time to repair anything because I just found out about the meeting this afternoon, and I had to leave work early to get here. And I have a fear of public speaking, so just if I say that, I'll fear it less. So, I did write a couple notes down though. This whole issue has, to me, seemed kind of inevitable. Like when I read about it, I thought, well, there's no way they're going to pass a parking minimum. This is Portland. When I moved to Portland, it seemed like the kind of place that you could at least pretend was different than the rest of America, that wanted to do things differently. So when I first read about this in the paper, I thought, there's no way that's going to pass. But then as it proceeded, it became kind of clear that there is a sense of inevitability that they're going to pass the minimum. It's obvious. And I think that inevitability has changed like what you guys are choosing to policy-wise do. I've heard it said that we live in the age of stupid. And if you look at the national politics, it's pretty stupid right now. We're unable to do anything in the face of massive crises that we are facing, catastrophic. You know, there's a depression right now. There's global climate change. Just go on. But we're not doing anything. It feels like that has reached Portland. And we're not doing, we're doing basically at this point trying to figure out the smartest way to do the stupid thing, which, and I've heard some suggestions tonight that are really smart. Robert Liberty had some ideas that might even be moving us forward to a new way of doing things. We're in a transition period right now between a time where people can make a living, a family wage living, support their family, live in a single bedroom house, blah, 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 to one where we're starting to see austerity really take hold in this country. People are getting turned away from cancer clinics, right? It was in the news today. They can't be treated. They can't be afforded to be treated. So we're in a transition period, and transitions are difficult. They're really difficult. But if we, is that a beat? Let me just stop.
No, you've got to.
Okay. If we require that we build these parking lots, it's a sunk cost that's going to be paid for by the future that's going to be living in a drastically different paradigm than we are living in right now. And it's not really fair for us to do that. We have to accept that things might get a little bit harder for us right now to make it so it's not as hard for people in the future. And if you just look at the demographics, you know, people are driving less. First of all, the economy is down. People can't afford to drive. Baby boomers are retiring. They're not commuting to their jobs as much. Younger people, Generation Y, I've heard said, they don't even want to buy cars. They don't see any point. And gas tax revenue is down for this reason. It's a feedback loop. It's just going to get worse. The more people stop driving, the less money there's going to be. It's just going to get worse. There's going to be no need for all these extra parking spaces. It's a complete waste. I realize there are difficulties right now. We can manage those difficulties. There's been some really good ideas of how we can. There's tons of space. It's an allocation issue. There's great ways to allocate that space during the transition. There's no reason to force these sunk costs on future generations.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Somebody who's not good at public speaking, me think you do protest too much.
Well, I didn't say I wasn't good. I said I was afraid of it.
Well done. Well done. Welcome.
Hi, my name's Alicia Cohen, and like my friend here, I live off of Division on 24th, just a few blocks, and I saw this issue come up, and I thought, it's not a big deal. It's totally antithetical to all of the planning in Portland. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense in terms of the 25-year plan. It doesn't make sense in terms of our goals for sustainability and for pollution reduction. And so this is my first time coming. But I also have two children and really young children. This is like the worst possible time for me to come. But I told my partner I'm going to this meeting. I have to go because I feel so deeply about this. I feel like it's like really a foundational issue, really fundamental, really important. I feel like if this passes minimum parking requirements, that it's turning against everything we've worked for as a city, going way, way back. And my neighborhood wouldn't exist. Those Richmond neighbors wouldn't live there if the neighbors in that neighborhood hadn't fought all those years ago in the 50s and 70s against the Mount Hood Freeway, which would have destroyed our neighborhood, the neighborhood that I live in. And those neighbors fought for a different vision, a vision of a city that wasn't based around the freedom of the personal car, a city that was based around neighborhoods and communities. And we're seeing that vision come to life in my neighborhood. There are many good things that have happened where I live. I see more people walking. I do see more people bicycling. I see the life and vitality. It's great to have new seasons. But I can tell you that I've lived there for 20 years, and the changes are really substantial in the last 5 years. The amount of traffic has gone up dramatically. And what that means for me with two young kids is that it absolutely does not feel safe to bicycle. I will drive my car, even though I'm here today testifying against cars, and I don't believe in the car culture. And I moved to Portland back from graduate school. I thought, I really want to go back to Portland because I want to live in a city that's doing something different. I don't want to live my life around driving my personal car. But I'll drive the few blocks to New Seasons because it just doesn't feel safe to get across Division with two kids and manage all of the rush hour traffic. It used to be sort of a quiet, sleepy enclave, and now it's really, really crowded with cars. And that's the thing. I feel a little bit like this is Alice in Wonderland, because it seems like the issues are upside down. Everybody's talking about parked cars, but as a mother, what I'm worried about is the moving cars, because it's the moving cars that cause the pollution that for people like me, and probably my kids inherited this too, like have lung sensitivities. All of that extra pollution is real, and it's something that you notice, and it's something that can cause illness long-term, but also immediate, and for people with asthma, inducing asthma attacks, so on and so forth. But also, my daughter's school is ranked in the bottom second percentile for pollution. From sitting factories, and we have all those diesel trains going through, and now they're talking about bringing the coal trains through. So we actually live in one of, it's been ranked by Forbes magazine, I think is one of the bottom worst 10. Portland has been ranked, despite being the greenest city in America, as one of the most polluted, worst places to live for environmental toxicity in the country. I really think we have to take that into account when we're thinking about planning for cars, and really take seriously this vision of high density without the car. I mean, I think my neighbors in RNGN are right to plead for some, not just 25 years from now in the 25-year plan solutions, but some immediate solutions to, like, what can we do for the pedestrians and the bicyclists and the families and people who with disabilities to make it better right now, to alleviate some of the stress and strain without resorting to this old imagination of like the personal car is freedom. Like many people, the city planners have said, it's that we do pay. I don't think parking is a right. I think parking is something people should pay for. I think clean air is a right. I think the ability to play safely on the street that you live on is a right. Those are rights. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Bob?
Wow. Thank you. I'm Bob Stacey. I'm a resident of the Richmond neighborhood. When Adrian and I bought our house in Richmond in 1976, we were hopeful that the future would be better than the present, which was a big gamble. The neighborhood had just survived its death sentence with the cancellation of the Mount Hood Freeway project you referred to. But it was still suffering what most people then thought was a terminal and irreversible illness, the flight of the middle class to the suburbs. With the loss of buying power in the Richmond neighborhood, Richmond lost businesses that served the neighborhood. The Keno's grocery store closed, other businesses closed. It was pretty tough to find a cafe to have lunch or dinner in, unless you wanted to risk your GI tract to a place called Packy Burger at 34th and Division. And the bus ran every 40 minutes on Division. A little more often at peak, but 40 minutes was a long time to wait. And I can tell you, I spent a lot of time waiting for the bus and watching lots of cars go by because suburbanites were driving through Richmond on Division and Powell in very large numbers without any apartment buildings. As people invested in the neighborhood, as people moved into the neighborhood and fixed up houses and bought houses, wealth came back. We got not New Seasons, in those days it was called Nature's Fresh, Northwest. We got other businesses. We got more frequent transit service. We got prosperity. We got zoning to support the kinds of changes that were occurring on our main streets. And now, finally, with a renaissance on the street of business and service, we've seen other people wanting to invest in and move in this neighborhood. There have been some teardowns of single family. There have been a lot of infills on side yards. And now we're seeing apartments. When I see a formerly dilapidated building, an empty parking lot replaced with a new mixed-use building, I don't get nervous or anxious. I get excited. I appreciate that I don't share that view with all my neighbors. But I hope this council will take some time to address the legitimate concerns that people have raised about parking, which you can't do through the zoning code, and you can do through the regulation of on-street parking as a scarce resource that can be managed intelligently. You've heard great testimony from Chris Smith, from Steve Gutman, and from others about using that mechanism, and I would implore you to keep your faith in Portland's future. People have talked about how we're at this turning point. We're finally seeing the realization of some long-held dreams about development on our main streets. I don't want you to do something risky that will break that trend, that will frustrate an old-timer who believed in the future 37 years ago. I have to say, though, that I'm reassured as a boomer